School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words Beats in Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words Beats in Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to Member Supported WPFW Washington.
Ceasefire today. Today is October 7th, 2024. This is Joni with To Heal DC, and we were marking this day, the day that the genocide started to increase in Gaza. Of course, there's been troubles there for decades, but this year was and continues to be a very frightening moment among humankind. We are going to be spending the hour talking to I'm going to call them a rainbow of activists from right here in Washington, D.C., from across the country, and we're going to end with an international voice, Mia Motley from Barbados, the Prime Minister of Barbados, with some encouraging words about the need for peace. We're going to be starting the hour with some, well, let me first say we're going to be spending the entire hour, I'm happy to say, with Reverend William Lamar. Reverend William Lamar is the pastor at AME Church, a Methodist church right here in Washington, D.C., and I'll let him explain how important that church is for some of you who may not know. But he's going to be leading us with some hopeful thoughts today in the midst of this ongoing genocide. And I like to say, of course, as with everything, there are many different opinions about what's going on, but I certainly stand with the people of Palestine. I stand for stopping the genocide. And although I am of Jewish background, like many other Jews, I'm with Palestine. I'm horrifically against what Israel has been doing. But we're going to be speaking to some voices from Jewish Voice for Peace and others. But let me welcome Reverend William Lamar. Greetings. Hopefully he can hear us. We have a packed show today, and we have not enough time for each speaker. Reverend Lamar, are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Very good. Yes.
Great.
Yes. Great. So welcome.
Well, thank you. Is the sound quality decent?
Absolutely. You have many people listening right now. So first start with introducing yourself briefly and the importance of your AME church right here in Washington, D.C. I always think of Rosa Parks when I go there. I was there for her homegoing. But tell us, just introduce yourself and for people who may not know the importance of the AME church right there in 15th and M.
Thank you very much, Joni. First of all, thank you again for the opportunity to share with the WPFW audience what you all do in Washington and nationally and globally. Helps us to move toward what I believe to be the ancestral dream and the divine dream for our planet, and that is that all human beings share fruitfully in the abundance that is all around us, without exploitation, without extraction, without oppression. I have been a pastor since 1999. I jokingly tell people I've been pastoring since the 1900s. I've been at Metropolitan for 10 years, since 2014. I just turned 50 years old in August, and 25 years of pastoral ministry, 10 of which have been here at Metropolitan. Metropolitan is an extraordinary space, and I'll give you all the truncated version. One of my teachers taught us that rhetoric is not just words, but any symbol that communicates. And so if you ever come to 1518 M Street, and I invite you to join us in worship and fellowship on Sunday mornings at 10, you will see an extraordinary architectural gem. And you'd have to imagine that there was a time in the 1880s when that was the towering physical presence on M Street in that block, because the parking garages and the towering buildings were not there. And the ancestors who designed that place wanted to show what they thought about their creator and themselves in the midst of American empire and the violence of white supremacist, extraction and settler colonialism. They thought differently of themselves, of their progeny, and of humankind. And so I say that it stands as a positive affirmation of a theology never embraced by the American empire up until this present day, and that is that all human beings are made in the divine image, and that all of us together can build a society where we welcome all with hospitality and we live peaceably one with another. And so I'm pleased to serve that extraordinary legacy. And as you mentioned, our history is grand. Frederick Douglass attended and was funeralized there. Rosa Parks's funeral was there. A. Philip Randolph, the towering American socialist who grew up in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, later had some of the same problems with religion that I have and that many of us have. He was funeralized at that church. But beyond what was, what is that we're on the vanguard of climate work, having received multiple millions of dollars to make sure that Black communities, poor communities are cooler in the midst of heat islands, having received funds to make sure that we train our families from within African traditions to really think differently about ourselves than the way the capitalist economy has us thinking about ourselves and who we are. So I'm pleased about the past, pleased about the present, and also pleased to join my voice with those who want the American empire's support of the Netanyahu regime to come to an end. We know that this is not the dream or will of all Jewish people, even of all Israeli people. But the way I saw an interview last night, a snippet with Kamala Harris being interviewed, and the gentleman was asking him that with all of the support that the American imperial regime gives to the Netanyahu regime, he still will not come to the table for a ceasefire. He still is leveraging my tax dollars to ensure that he saves his own political hide when those around him know that he surrounded himself with ultra right-wing folk, basically, based on my reading, to save his own political hide at the expense of human life. And there has to be a different way. There is a different way. We must muster the courage to take that different way.
Absolutely. And let me just add, and Reverend Lamar will share this at the end of the show, there's going to be another very special homegoing service Wednesday, October 16th at the AME Church. Bill Lucy, who has been on this program many times, is a hero of mine and Chuck and many of you out there in the labor movement. Marched with Dr. King in Memphis, was right there by his side. A very important labor activist in this city and in the nation. So stay tuned. Reverend Lamar will say a few more words about that at the end of the program, but I certainly agree with him. We have to stop this genocide. And not only Netanyahu do we need to point a finger at, we need to point a finger at the powers that be in this country, particularly the folks who make the bombs and make sure that the United States keeps spending billions and billions of dollars killing people, when right here in Washington, D.C., people do not have a home to live in. Many people are getting ready to be evicted from their homes because things are getting worse. People don't have food to eat. We don't have health care, on and on and on. So we must put an end to this genocide. And I'm happy to introduce our first speaker of many, and I wish we will have more time with her in the future. I'd like to introduce Lily. She's with If Not Now, and she's going to tell us briefly about herself, briefly about If Not Now, and then what If Not Now is doing today right here at Malcolm X Park. Lily, welcome, and introduce you a little better than I just did, your full name and a little bit about your background.
Thanks, Joni. My name is Lily Greenberg Hall. I, up until May of this year, was actually working in the Biden administration. I was a political appointee, and on May 15th, I became the first Jewish political appointee to publicly resign in protest over the way the administration has handled the last year and their unconditional support for Israel's assault on Gaza. A little bit about me. I'm an American Jew. I grew up mostly in California, and actually I've spent most of my life like really deeply embedded in Jewish community. Proud of my Jewishness and of my community. I went to Jewish day school. I spent many, many years involved in different like Jewish advocacy orgs, and some of that was actually pro-Israel lobbying throughout high school and college. I have quite a bit of I have a lot of loved ones in Israel, Israeli friends and family, and grew up in a deeply Zionist community where support for the state of Israel was how we were taught to protect Jewish people. It was seen as the answer to anti-Semitism, really, a really like important part of what it means to be Jewish. And I'm very grateful that as I got older and spent time in university and worked in human rights spaces, got to study Arabic, got to go back to Israel-Palestine and actually spend time in the West Bank and really hear the Palestinian narrative from Palestinians themselves. And I was able to learn and unlearn and understand what Israel means for Palestinians, right, and what it has meant for the last 8 decades.
And Lily, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you have about 3 minutes left to really share what's going on with
Thank
If
you.
Not
well,
Now.
All that to say is, I was able to get involved in the movement for Palestinian freedom, and that is, what eventually would lead me to resign. I'm really excited is not the right word, but looking forward to the event taking place later today from 6 to 8 p.m. in Malcolm X Park, If Not Now, which is a group of American Jews dedicated to, ending our own community support for the occupation, is putting together these events across the country. They're called Every Life a Universe gatherings. They're happening in major cities across the country today. It's a joint memorial services for Palestinians and Israelis who have been killed over the last year. This is a really challenging moment for Jewish community, especially in the middle of our High Holy Days, which is the time in between our New Year and Yom Kippur, which you're in right now. And so these gatherings are going to be a space to mark a year since October 7th to grieve for Israelis killed, many of whom, people in our communities are connected to and knew personally, and to also mark, a year of the massacres and starvation in Gaza, and now the, escalation into Lebanon, to really emphasize what our tradition and the Muslim tradition and the Christian tradition teaches, that every life is a universe. And when you end one life, you destroy a whole universe unto itself. And these spaces will be a place for us as Jews in particular to reject this lie that we've been, that we've been told, that subjugation of Palestinians will somehow lead to Jewish safety. And we know that that's not true.
And so Lily, tell us again, where is this event today in Washington, D.C., and what time?
Malcolm X Park, so Meridian Hill Park, from 6 to 8 p.m. Everyone is invited, whether you're Jewish or not Jewish. Please, you know, if you come, wear white. We ask that folks don't bring signs. And we're very excited to offer this space to people.
Lily, thank you so much. We hope to have you on again in the future where we have a little more time. Thank you for the work you're doing. And thank you for the work of If Not Now, one of the Jewish organizations out there in the street trying to stop this genocide. In a moment, I'm going to welcome Hannah with the Jewish Voice for Peace right here in D.C., but I'm just going to add a little footnote to what Lily just said. Of course, the Jewish community is like all communities that exist in the world. People within these communities are different. We don't all have the same background or the same beliefs. I just want to stand up for my family, my mother, Justine, my dad. They were never in support of what Israel was doing in Palestine. They would be right there in the streets and are right there. Their spirit is in the streets in Palestine to stop this genocide. With that said, I'm happy to welcome Hannah with Jewish Voice for Peace, D.C. Of course, Jewish Voice for Peace is a national organization doing lots of things here in D.C. and across the country. We're very proud of them. And Hannah's going to talk a little bit about some of the new priority strategies as we walk into this, I hate to say a second year of genocide, but we're certainly marking the end of this particular year. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me, Joni. I'm very honored to be here with you all. I don't have too much time, but I'll introduce myself and JVP briefly and talk a little bit about what we've been up to during the past year and then kind of where our focus is going in the coming months. So I, like Lily, grew up in a pretty similar context, mainstream Zionist Jewish community and congregations, just on the other side of the country. And my belief in some of these narratives and this mythology about Israel that I had been raised on fell apart during the 2014 assault on Gaza while I was in college, and I've been involved with JVP in chapters around the Northeast since about 2016.
But Hannah, I'm sorry, we have so little time today. I really want you to talk about some of the new strategies you shared with me about what Jewish Voice for Peace is going to be doing more this year to try to stop the genocide. So can you talk a little bit about that in the 3 minutes you have left?
Oh, boy. Yes. So we are specifically thinking about how we use our position and sort of the role in this movement for Palestinian liberation to start to dismantle and disrupt these structures that are continue to uphold the violence in Gaza, and particularly thinking about Jewish institutions. So we are partially looking specifically at the ADL, which is the Anti-Defamation League, and some of what they do. Their self-purported mission is that they claim to be a civil rights organization working to end anti-Semitism. They've become sort of the de facto body for discussing anti-Semitism in America. But what we know to be true is that essentially since their origins over 100 years ago, they've operated as a right-wing organization working to stifle both radical politics within the Jewish left and also sort of progressive causes and movements more broadly. They essentially function as a Zionist pro-Israel lobby that has shown themselves to be willing to undermine and discredit progressive movements and causes essentially at any cost in the interest of supporting Israel. They have a history of surveilling and attacking groups like the Movement for Black Lives, the NAACP, American Indian Movement, ACLU, United Farm Workers, and especially surveil and malign Palestinian and Arab identity and political groups. So they often seek to embed themselves in institutions around the country. They're known for these kind of like diversity and sensitivity trainings in this educational curricula. You might find them in your schools, in your private workplace, at your city council, within local politics. They're pretty pervasive. And within JBP, we are trying to think about how we really disrupt this narrative that groups like the ADL speak for all Jews. We know that there are serious and legitimate political differences between the Jewish left and the Jewish right, which I think we don't always talk about the fact that there is a Jewish left and a Jewish right. And what the ADL wants to do is keep us locked into these conversations about Jewish identity and about Israel as, you know, about a conversation about Israel as being a conversation about anti-Semitism. We know, and they know essentially, that they cannot win in a conversation about the facts of what Israel is doing.
Lily, I'm sorry, Hannah, I'm going to interrupt you. What exactly is Jewish Voice for Peace in D.C. going to do to reverse this power that ADL has had for decades? And you have 2 minutes left to finish up with what JVP is doing this year.
Yeah, we are, stay tuned a little bit, because we are working on some events. There will be a teach-in coming up, partially about the ADL. There's so much more that I could say about what they are doing and sort of the role that they play institutionally, locally and nationally.
Hannah, let me just say, as an activist since birth, the ADL's power is gotten in part because they work together with the powers that be in this country. So what is it? It's not just that they have a position, but they're working for the capitalist system. So what JVP DC, what specifically will you do to try to stop that situation that's been going on for so long?
Yeah, we're still working on our specific action plan right now. And some of it, you know, I'm on the action committee and we focus on nonviolent direct action. So there's a part of our group that's focusing on a series of teach-ins that will be more public. And then some of us are thinking more about some of the under the radar things that, you know, we'll be doing. The ADL headquarters is in DC. So if you follow Jewish Voice for Peace on Instagram and sign up for a newsletter, you can find out. We haven't scheduled them yet, but there will be events at the ADL headquarters. There will be a teach-in scheduled at a library in DC is the plan. We've been working with DC for Palestine on that. And also listeners can go to dropTheADL.org. It's a great website with resources. Part of it is that we would really just like to raise the profile of this conversation because, you know, listeners might find the ADL at their workplace or in their school system or at the city council. And we want people to be prepared and empowered and knowledgeable to push back when they show up at these places and start to chip away more broadly. So this is definitely an evolving and emerging strategy. And we're really thinking, you know, at the 1 year mark of how we start to shift looking more institutionally, as we've seen that this is, you know, the violence on the ground is not enough to push our politicians away from this. And we need really structural solutions.
How can listeners who don't know how to check out JVP in the district, how can they find you?
So we are at JVCDC Metro is our social media information. JewishVoiceForPeace.org. You can find a network of chapters and a lot of resources. The national organization is sort of a home for how to get involved, how to get on different email lists.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Hannah. As I said, we have a packed show. Thank you very much for the work that you do and the work that Jewish Voice for Peace does. I wanted to make sure I have time for something that I'm particularly very excited about, and that is introducing Carol Rosenblatt. She's going to talk about the role of labor in the district, what she has been doing, and I'll let her introduce herself. She has been with an organization called Coalition of Labor Union Women, who I've been part of. Our own Elise Bryant has been the executive director of that national organization, Coalition of Labor Union Women, and she's also been involved with DC activists. And I have been very excited to hear about what she has done this year to organize the local DC labor movement to get out in front of the Wilson Building and say we must stop this genocide. But I'll let Carol tell the story. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much, Joni, and thank you for having this show today. And I'm not really going to spend much time talking about myself because there's so much else to discuss, and everything that, you know, we've done has been as a team. So I have a long social justice and labor advocacy history. And I'm, you know, proud that I've been involved with this since I was in junior high school, and now I'm retired and still active. So in terms of labor, early, I guess, on in the war, there were a number of unions that spoke out and passed resolutions in calling for ceasefire. The organization that you mentioned, Coalition of Labor Union Women, at their national convention in November of 2023 did that. And locally, however, labor was not too visible in activating their own members. So we joined with the organization that was on the ground and doing a lot of the work, which was DC for Ceasefire Now Coalition. The new name is DC for Palestine. And since almost the inception, they worked to try to get our city council, you know, that's right in the center of Washington, DC, you know, where a lot of this is happening, to pass a resolution on ceasefire, including, of course, the fact that we felt that tax dollars, our tax dollars and our weapons should not be going to kill innocent people in Palestine. So that effort was going on for months through all kinds of strategizing. But labor wasn't as involved as they should have been. And while we had representatives at a press conference in January calling on this to occur in a more public way, we got more involved in the summer in two actions in front of the Wilson Building, June 5th and July 9th, shortly before council was to go on recess. And we reached out as kind of a committee of advocates to every organization in the area that was labor affiliated to try to get involved. And we had no idea what the outcome would be. But at our first effort on June 5th, not only did some national, but also local organizations get involved, but we had a great number of community groups. If I have time, I'll mention the labor groups.
Yes, please, please. It's very impressive, the labor organizations locally. Again, nationally, there's been some progress, but share with us, Carol, the labor organizations that were involved.
Just to set some background, the National Labor Network for Ceasefire, which was really put together by some of the U.S. Labor Against the War leadership, and I had been involved in that organization initially also, had been collecting organizations that were supporting a ceasefire petition that they put together. As of today, there's about 1,000 supporters. And the national unions that were part of this are, and I'm going to, you know, say the names quickly, are the National Nurses United, the postal workers, the flight attendants, auto workers, UE, electrical workers, painters, NEA, which is the National Education Association, and National Writers Union. So they ended up supporting our first picket, where they normally don't, you know, support individual actions. We reached out to them and they, you know, were willing to be involved. So all of those unions that I mentioned really were supportive on a national level. So my CLU chapter, which I'm very proud, took a leadership role. That's the Metro DC chapter, the Industrial Workers of the World, their Education Committee, Screen Actors Guild, the American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, and their sister guild member for Ceasefire. This is the caucus of their unions. The Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance, their Maryland chapter, Georgetown Alliance of Graduate Employees, all were supportive and all, you know, went on record in support. At that rally, it was a one-hour picket before work. We were able to print up signs, have them on, you know, wooden sticks, so we were visible. Mark Dumenstein, the president of the Postal Workers, spoke. Petora Johnson, the vice president of the American Flight Attendants, spoke. Chelsea Bland, my flu president chapter, spoke. It was a very positive rally. We had many, many community supporters there. And from that time, we then organized another picket similar with additional support from Unite Here, Local 25, Local 500 SEIU, the Nonprofit Professional Employees Union, on July 9th, that called on a last minute effort prior to council going on leave to take action. And while we were not successful in having this done, that will not stop us from continuing to put pressure on every group and in every forum we can. But I think it's important to just give a few.
And we're basically out of time, so just wrap up your.
All right. Well, you know, we are grieving, you know, the 41,000 Palestinians that have been killed, the 96,000 wounded, the 1,200 Israelis killed and hostages of 251, and the almost total destruction of Gaza as a place to live. So our hearts go out to all of those who are suffering so greatly, and we must, and we have an election coming up, keep our eyes on the prize that this war must end.
And Carol Rosenblatt, thank you very much. We will have you on more. And I'd like to also give a shout out to my co-host, Chuck Hicks, who I think is with us on Zoom. And of course, Chuck has been a lifelong labor activist. And I can say I've been one as well, was the president of the largest labor union in this city, Ask Me, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And Chuck, I'm sure you would agree that labor has a key role to play to stop this war. And I'm sure you were proud.
Absolutely.
Right?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Yes, I agree.
Yes. And so we're going to keep on keeping on. And thank you, Carol. And of course, it's critical that labor continues to struggle with the local powers that be here in this city, this local city council, who still has not taken a position to stop this genocide. So thank you, Carol Rosenblatt, for representing and working with labor. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. This is Joni with Chuck, and we are marking today the 1 year since the escalation of this genocide in Gaza, with a threat now, a very serious threat of an expanded regional war. And we're sorry to be rushing through this day, but we're excited about this second segment. Reverend Lamar is with us still, and hopefully he'll have a chance to jump in with our next guest, who is with the Institute of Policy Studies, which that organization doesn't need to be introduced per se, but his name is Corey Peterson Smith. He works closely with Phyllis Bennis, with many of you are familiar with her. And Corey, we're happy to have you joining us on this particular day. What words might you want to share with our listeners? Most of our listeners are extremely hurt and angry at the killing, the nonstop killing that has been going on week after week, day after day, is expanding. And now there is this real threat of a horrific regional war. So welcome, Corey.
Thank you so much. And what an honor to be part of this really incredible show. You know, I'm trying to hold two things. One is just, well, you know, as your guests have pointed out, it's just the incredible loss of life over this past year, which is impossible to hold truly. But also, you know, this has been a year of just dehumanization of Middle Eastern folks, in particular Palestinian folks, and now we're seeing Lebanese folks in a really horrific way, from just the genocidal onslaught we've seen in Gaza to the denial of the right of a Palestinian speaker to address the Democratic Convention, to this horrific pager attack, which the Washington Post just published an exclusive investigation of, and they're still using words like ingenious to describe this horrific, unreal act of violence, to, you know, political assassinations that Israel has done in broad daylight over the course of this year, and these being celebrated by U.S. officials. So on one hand, this unreal level of dehumanization that basically says, look, some people deserve to die and others deserve to live. But on the other hand, this has been a year where people in this country, especially young people, have asserted, we actually will not accept this dehumanization as normal. We will not accept genocidal violence as just a part of our world that we have to live with. We are saying no, and we know people in this country have paid a price for that, but that has not stopped this wave of protests, which continues to this day. So holding both of those things.
And we'd also like to give a shout out to the older folks. We had earlier this year a 100-year-old man from Vermont who on his birthday stood out there in Vermont protesting the genocide that was going on back in April. And Reverend Lamour, I don't know if you might have a comment together with Corey with IPS and any thoughts you'd like to jump in before we continue on with Corey.
Sure. And it's a joy to hear your thoughts, Corey, and to be a part of this discussion. I think that one of the things that disturbs me most with journalism, Corey mentioned how Washington Post journalists were celebrating really the dastardly and diabolical pager attacks that violate any understanding of warfare. And of course, those understandings are debatable. I'm not a fan of many of the justifications, but a lot of innocent people lost their lives because they were in physical proximity of those with those pagers. Mm-hmm. And what I want to add is that one genocide does not give the moral excuse to propagate another. And we've got to dig deeply. I'm really appalled at the lack of moral imagination that we have as human beings. Mm-hmm. Violence has never, ever produced peace. It has never produced peace. Mm-hmm. Fear has never, ever produced a situation where human beings can live harmoniously with one another. History proves this, yet, as many have said, 50% of our tax dollars go to the war economy. I tell people, when you land in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. at DCA, the buildings around you mm-hmm. are towering monuments to death and destruction.
Absolutely.
And I will continue to say that we can and must do better. We had a discussion at the church yesterday about Proposition 83, ranked choice voting, and some people kept pressing representation, representation. What I keep sharing is what I can't remember the political scientist's name. He wrote a book called The Price of the Ticket. His argument about the fact that when Barack Obama was elected, Black politics had its final surrender to the Democratic.
Yes.
We got to do something different.
Yes. And let's have Corey say one final thought before we move to Mia Motley, who is the Prime Minister of Barbados. I wouldn't blame the people, In the United States, as much as I would blame the system, the power system, the capitalist imperialist system that allows the gun makers, the bomb makers, and all those folks to be in control of what is going on in our world. It is shameful. And how we are ever going to defeat them, of course, I think back of Hitler, which, although I wasn't physically here, I can picture now much even better how a whole country doesn't have the power and the ability to stop thousands and thousands of people being killed. But Corey, before we move on to Mia Motley, your final thought for now.
Well, not only do I completely agree with you, but I think that what we're seeing amidst this horror is that people in this country are actually waking up to the reality that you are describing. Because for most of this past year, polls have shown majority of Americans actually want this to end. And now a majority of Americans want the U.S. to stop sending weapons to Israel, and yet the weapons keep going. And so many people in this country are saying, wait a minute, this actually is not democratic. This foreign policy. This doesn't seem to be a democracy at all. The Palestinians are not representing the people. They are going in defiance of the people. And despite that, the poll numbers keep growing in terms of Americans who want an end to this. So, you know, it's hard to celebrate anything in the midst of this horror, but let's recognize that this has been a profound breakthrough. Never in the history of this country has this many people been with us, the majority of people with us, on a policy demand regarding Palestine. And I think that we have to grapple with this new kind of power. I mean, on one hand, yes, we have not been able to actually change the U.S. policy, and yet we have an opportunity and a responsibility that we've never had. And so, you know, as your other guests talked about in terms of strategy, you know, I really appreciate that, because that's what we all need to be thinking about. What do we do now that people are with us on changing U.S. policy toward Israel?
Absolutely. And of course, we won't be on next week, but had we been on next week, October 12th is the birthday of Dick Gregory, who was always out in the streets against these wars historically. And it'll be the date when John Brown led a raid at Harper's Ferry. I think that was 1859. And of course, later, the Civil War. That was the start of the Civil War. And as Frank Smith, the founder of the African American Civil War Museum, always says, there were 200,000 black people alone who fought in that war. So we have been trying to stand up for a while. We will continue to do so. But I want you to put both of your ears on now and take a listen to my Shiro, the person that really describes best my opinions and my beliefs. Mia Motley, the Prime Minister of Barbados. She gave a talk to the United Nations about 2 weeks ago, and listen to what she has to say.
Stop the killing, save the children, start the healing, take the weapons, melt them all. Make us tools to rebuild the town.
Ceasefire. And let me be clear. We condemn the actions of Hamas on October 7th. But we equally and strongly deplore the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, which is the result of the disproportionate use of force by Israel. There's no justification for it. Mr. President, above all else, we need a global reset on peace. There needs to be global peace. And those of us who are old enough would have recognized that there are peaks and valleys as it relates to this issue of conflict. There are few areas where the world is more in need of the United Nations acting as the United Nations to secure the objectives of the Charter than in the area of peace and security. The silence that has engulfed Sudan is unacceptable and may well be rooted in the racism that the world still carries as a badge of honor from the victories of the last great war of the World War II. The actions in Myanmar cannot continue. Ukraine has sucked more oxygen out of the global community and the global financial system than any of us can appropriately accept at that very time when the world needs to be applying its resources and efforts to fighting the greatest crisis known to mankind. And the spread of the war from Gaza to the consequences in the West Bank to now clearly what is happening in Lebanon as we speak with Israel, all of these are but the tip of an iceberg of death, violence, and instability, and robs the global community of oxygen and resources at the very time when we need it most in a strategic way. We all know, as students of history, that even the longest war in history came to an end. These wars, yes, they too will come to an end. But the question is when and at what cost, and without much loss of life, with how many children not being able to be either given the chance to live or will now live with memories of war that will affect their every action for the next 60, 70, 80 years of their lives. Innocent people are paying the price with the one thing that is theirs to give, and they don't give it willingly. It is their life. Unless we address the root causes of these wars, one by one, and in manners in which they are being sustained and financed, we will never, never know anything else other than war and rumors of war in these theaters. The transmittal of these scenes of horror in real time into people's bedrooms, into people's living rooms, will trigger two extreme reactions, neither of which are acceptable to us in the third decade of the 21st century. We will either get the desensitizing of ordinary people to the loss of lives, especially those of innocent children and women on the one hand, or we will get, on the other hand, the anger and inclination for vengeance that it spawns necessarily. We need peace. And it cannot be too difficult for us to work for peace. It is the same Bible that tells us in the stories of the Old Testament much which has guided many people across this world. But when we turn from the Old Testament to the New Testament, it is Romans that says to us, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, not any country, not any human being." So that the Bible can't be used as a convenient aid when it suits us and rejected when it doesn't. In the midst of this maelstrom, we were very clear. My country took the step this year of recognizing and establishing diplomatic relations with the state of Palestine, in spite of having supported a two-state solution since 1969. And we did this because it is clear to us that the state and people of Palestine, human beings, are entitled to full recognition by integration into and support from the international community. The Charter does not say we the people, with the exception of any one group from any one part of the world. We join with others, therefore, in congratulating the state of Palestine in taking their seat among the United Nations member states as they did on the 10th of September of this year. And let me be clear, we condemn the actions of Hamas on October 7th, but we equally and strongly deplore the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, which is the result of the disproportionate use of force by Israel. There's no justification for it. And that is why treaties exist governing the rules of engagement for war, because we as human beings learnt better and know better and committed to better. a two-state solution, no matter how elusive it may appear to be now, is the only answer. And I've said already this week that we have known difficult battles in mankind's history. But when we were in it, we didn't think we could achieve it, but we did. We abolished slavery. We removed apartheid in South Africa. These battles are not beyond our creativity, our capacity, and our resilience to resolve them. Similarly, we insist that the killing in Ukraine really has to stop. The people of Ukraine must be allowed to live within the internationally recognized boundaries of their state in peace and freedom from the threat of use or force. And as I said, it is sucking too much oxygen out of the global financial system, and countries that should be the beneficiary of aid are being told that they may have to wait in the interest of the defense of others because of war. I say to us truly, there has to be a singular commitment to build a peace.
And thank you, Mia Motley. Prime Minister of Barbados, speaking in the United Nations a few weeks ago, definitely represents a lot of our feelings, I'm sure, listeners out there. We have a few minutes left before we need to close. I want to say a few thank yous while I have this minute to Mark Harrison, activist who helped support me in producing this show. Thanks, of course, to all the fabulous guests with Jewish Voice for Peace, if not now, with the labor movement. And thanks to Corey. Maybe we'll have a chance for him to say a few seconds before we leave. Corey with the Institute for Policy Studies. Thanks, of course, to Magic Mike and to Mari and to Chuck. Corey, if you have a few seconds, and then we're going to jump right back to Reverend Lamar. Maybe let's go directly to Reverend Lamar with his final thoughts for today. Reverend Lamar, are you there?
Yes, I am. And I want to thank you all again for the opportunity to share. I am committed to peace. I am committed to going in a different direction than most people characterize those who would follow the revolutionary Christ. And that is, we are not white evangelicals. We are not white evangelicals in blackface. There must be peace. We can no longer serve this militaristic imperial thrust of supporting the Israeli state at all costs, especially the cost of precious Palestinian lives. I want to remind us that before the Zionist occupation on that wonderful piece of land, that land bridge between Asia and Africa, that there were Muslims, Christians, and Jews living in peace. This is a Sankofa moment to go back to that. It is entirely possible, difficult, but possible. And we have the joy to sustain the fight.
Yes, absolutely. And on behalf of Chuck Hicks, and Chuck, are you still there with us? As I briefly mentioned, we lost a great hero. We haven't yet had the opportunity to honor him on WPFW. We will be dedicating in the future, if not October, then definitely in November. Bill Lucy, who was side by side with Reverend King in Memphis when Dr. King was killed, He has played a huge role as one of the founders of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, a leader within the National American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Chuck and I have had him on the radio with us at least two or three times a year. But we are honored to say, or sad to say, but honored that the homegoing service for Bill Lucin, we won't be on the air again before this, will be Wednesday, October 16th at the Metropolitan AME Church. And Reverend Lamar, you have a minute, a very short minute, to just say your words about that service.
Thank you. We want to invite the community to join us as we celebrate the ancestral elevation of William Lucy. He was a man of all ages. He is one who will continue to guide us toward what it looks like to have true economic freedom and political freedom here and globally. And so we look forward to celebrating his life legacy and seeking his guidance as an ancestor as we move forward.
And he will be guiding us. So that's William Lucy. That's Wednesday, October 16th. I think it starts at 11 a.m. at the AME Church. And Chuck and I will definitely be coming back to celebrate our dear ancestor, Bill Lucy. We're going out with Ayanna Gregory. And keep in mind, we need peace. We need to organize for it.
Save the children, start the healing, take the weapons, melt them all down, make us tools to rebuild the town.
Ceasefire,
ceasefire,
ceasefire.
The Institute for Policy Studies, Busboys and Poets in the Nation invite you to a conversation between author and activist Bill Fletcher Jr. and labor historian Dana Frank, discussing Frank's new book, What Lessons We Can Learn from the Great Depression, Stories of Ordinary People and Collective Action in Hard Times, on Tuesday, October 8th at 6:30 p.m. Professor Frank explores how ordinary people working collectively met the crisis head-on and how we can apply those lessons in the challenges we face today. The book event, What Can We Learn from the Great Depression? Stories of Ordinary People and Collective Action in Hard Times, Tuesday, October 8th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the 5th and K Street Bus Boys and Poets. For more information and a way to RSVP is online. ips-dc.org/Great Depression Lessons. That's ips-dc.org/Great Depression Lessons. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m.
for the Labor Heritage Hour Hour.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
As anarchist Emma Goldman said so famously, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
And that's how we feel about labor music, films,
theater, poetry,
labor history, labor art,
spoken word. Basically anything that brings labor and the arts together.
So, join us for the Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
The international unites the whole.
Bethesda Theater presents Spyro Gyro, celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year, or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world,
one broadcast at a time.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians, and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and